Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Just to close out the Blue Runner gumbo opinion poll, are Democrats out of step with the American people? 86% of the respondents say yes. Two freshman legislators have written a letter to the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, as well as introducing a bill. That's Representative Chip Roy from Texas and Representative Mark Green from Tennessee. And they propose that the cartels in Mexico be considered terrorist organizations. Todd Bensman joins us from the Center for Immigration Studies, Texas-based senior national security fellow. Todd, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Todd, as a 40-year law enforcement guy, this was music to my ears because I think it brings about a lot more tools in the toolbox. And there should be bipartisan support for this because those that are against the wall say that we need to do other innovative things. And it sounds like one to me. Your thoughts?
Well, I think this is probably going to run smack into a Democratic brick wall in the House in terms of a bill. Now, this bill doesn't really do much more than call for support and request that the State Department do this. The good news is that it doesn't really matter whether there's a vote on this bill, because it looks like President Trump has heard the message already and probably read the bill and has already indicated that he will strongly consider ordering the State Department to take this under advisement and maybe issue a designation.
So what would be the detractors' position would be what? Why would they be opposed to this?
Well, I think really in this particular instance, it would be because President Trump said he liked it. And the individuals who proposed it are Republicans. And so I'm just speaking in terms of the current climate, the political climate. Beyond that, there shouldn't be any reason to oppose it unless you wanted to make an argument that it would strain our counterterrorism capabilities as they stand now. Because, I mean, there is something to be said for, the U.S. Homeland Security enterprise spending time and resources dealing with organizations like ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, which are designated terrorist groups. So declaring the Mexican cartels terrorist groups would probably put some additional burden on those agencies.
But it would allow them, you know, in the course of their investigations, which are going to go on anyway. We know that there's a lot of cross-border activity between the cartels and what's going on in the United States. That's been documented over years. In fact, the high-intensity drug trafficking area designation along the border, I think, has talked about this as a threat assessment. And it's one of the reasons why I've been very supportive of the border wall is that we have a Mexican government that's dysfunctional when it comes to dealing with the Mexican cartels. In fact, any number of politicians have been murdered by the cartels if they are going to take a policy position against the cartels. We know that a lot of the southern border activities that are problematic for us are driven by the cartels as well, correct?
Absolutely. I think that it's a very easy argument to make that the Mexican cartels are a homeland security threat to the U.S. just by virtue of their alliances with transnational gangs that are based here in the U.S. that are extremely violent in cities across the country, getting that drug over, the contraband over. What this would do, a designation would do, is just open up, like I've written, a whole armory of new weaponry that can be used to punish them and debilitate them. Once you've got a designation, then suddenly you can freeze assets. You can prosecute for material support anybody who's in a transnational gang that's supporting a Mexican cartel. You know, you can get them on terrorism statutes. You can freeze their funds. You can prevent them from traveling. You can put them on no-fly lists. These are tools that are extremely significant and could really damage the cartels if the president decided to designate them, have the State Department designate them.
So other than because nobody wants to support anything that Trump's doing, contrary to what's the best interest of this country, you know, and I just want to make this one point I just found in your article. The cartel is responsible for murdering 132 Mexican politicians during the 2018 national elections. And during 2012, they killed 48 politicians hostile to, you know, their activities. This in and of itself is, to me, is evidence of a terrorist organization. And that's the dysfunction that I'm talking about. Not that the Mexican government is totally dysfunctional, but when it comes to managing the cartels in this country, in Mexico, they have exhibited a complete inability to do so.
Yeah, I think that what the Democrats, I think what the issue would be for them is that if you were to agree and you put this thing to a vote and vote for it, you're sort of lending support to the idea that there's an emergency at the border, Trump's emergency at the border. And honestly, I just can't see Democrats lending any kind of credence or support for that idea right now. But in terms of whether Mexican cartels are terrorist organizations, one of the key thresholds that an organization has to meet in order to be designated a terrorist organization is that their violence and their activity have to be in support of some sort of ideology or some kind of political change or social change to coerce governments, right? And I think that the Mexican cartels, an argument really can be made by virtue of the murders that they're doing, politicians, and the intimidation tactics to coerce the Mexican government to leave them alone is the definition of political coercion for a social purpose, for a political purpose, for an ideological purpose. And I also think it's interesting that the authors of this bill are saying that these organizations are interested in they're anarchists. And anarchy is an ideology. It's a political ideology. And that in the territories that they control, they are anarchists because they want to remove the governments from controlling territory.
Well, it's an alter government infrastructure that's been developed in any number of I forgot what they call their political subdivisions in Mexico. But in those areas where they have complete control and the formalized Mexican government is totally impotent.
Yeah, because through brute force and intimidation and bribery, the cartels have coerced and influenced a political situation, a circumstance. That's the definition. That's what the Taliban tries to do. That's what Al-Qaeda did in Afghanistan.
It's no different than the caliphate in the Middle East. I mean, they're actually controlling parts of the country and territory of the country with this alter government that they basically set up and process.
Yeah, and I mean, you could call them safe havens, really. I mean, we call ISIS, the caliphate, a safe haven from which they can operate and conduct activities that are anathema to American interests and homeland security. So I think they've got an argument here. Whether the president actually can push this thing through will be very interesting. It'll be a real game changer in homeland security. You'll have definitely additional burdens on American homeland security establishment and agencies, but I'm sure they can absorb it. And this will be very interesting to watch.
Todd, real quick, I just have a few seconds. The Customs and Border Patrol Agents Association wrote a letter to the president saying, you're not doing enough. You promised us you'd do more. It is unsafe. It is a national emergency. What are you going to do? This is something you could do.
Are you talking? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm assuming that I haven't read the letter, but can you characterize it for me real quick?
They just basically said they're frustrated that he's promised a lot more to happen and it's not happening. And I guess they're placing blame at the feet of the president, and he's being challenged in every district court almost in America as it relates to immigration issues. I'm sure he's frustrated, but they're completely frustrated.
I mean, yeah, that's what I would say is that, you know, you have a stalemate, not just in the courts, but in the Congress. And so the things that need to be done are getting, it's not that the president's not attempting to facilitate change. It's that when he does, every single time, there's a war on Trump's initiatives. There's just simply a war on it. So, you know, and it's somewhat effective. It's bogging him down. It's bogging everything down. I mean, we saw it with the funding for the border wall. You have in place some laws and a patchwork of policies and procedures and systems that are just geared for illegal immigration. They're perfect. They're almost tailor-made for illegal immigration en masse.
Well, Todd Bensman, thank you. I got to interrupt you. I'm sorry. I got to get to a break. Thank you so much for joining. Always appreciate your perspective on these issues. Your article was great. I thought it laid out the case perfectly for the president to make this decision, and hopefully Congress will embrace it at some point in time. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's Todd Bensman, Center for Immigration Studies, Texas-based Senior National Security Fellow. We'll be right back. What are your thoughts? Should these cartels be labeled as terrorist organizations? I wanted to just correct one thing and to make sure that I fairly characterize the article that was written by Todd Bensman. He recognizes that there are some issues with giving the designation of a terrorist organization to the Mexican drug cartels. And he says, ordinarily, I'd feel inclined to write off a proposal like this as political candy with a quick caloric sugar high. But since the country is so on top of border security solutions right now, the Roy and Green proposal, with a little work and effort, should warrant serious consideration as part of a broader grouping of solutions to our southern border problem. The last statement I made, I thought was a little overreaching once I thought about it, and I wanted to make sure that I was fair as it relates to what he was saying. And I think his article, he laid it out very well as to and I think the upside far outweighs the downside of the designation. Let's go to line one, talk to Mickey in Algiers Point. What say you, Mickey?
Hey, good morning, Chair.
Good morning.
Well, 2 points. One, I just think it's kind of like what you just said. It's a sugar high. You know, Trump will feel like, oh, look, there's I'm designating these guys as terrorists. And that's even more reason to build my wall. Like, We've been fighting the drug war for 40 years. It's over. We lost. You can't get rid of demand, right? So the only way to take it away is to legalize this stuff and tax it.
So you want to legalize fentanyl, heroin, cocaine, methamphetamines, cartenafil. You want to legalize all of that?
Well, a lot of those things are produced in the U.S. They're not, you know, you're saying that.
No, a lot of it's produced in China and actually comes through the Mexican southern border into our country. That's been proven. So we want to legalize all. Cartenafil is what they use to knock out elephants. It's 1,000 times stronger than heroin. We want to make that legal.
Well, heroin's illegal. How have you done eliminating that?
Well, I agree with you. This is a war that it's not a question of winning. It's a question of creating balance. And how intrusive can we be? We're not ever going to totally eradicate this. We've never eradicated prostitution. But that doesn't mean that maybe it ought to be legal for us to negotiate sex. Because there's a lot of people that would argue that, but they don't understand the peripheral criminal conduct and environment that's created by these types of transactions. And it's the same thing as it relates to drugs.
But they're being created because it's illegal. If it's legal, you don't have the peripheral stuff.
Of course you do.
Illegal,
they've legalized marijuana.
Have you been to Amsterdam?
I've talked to the legal authorities in Amsterdam as well as part of the Homeland Security Committee, and they tell a completely different story. It's the same thing that's what's going on in Colorado and Washington and California as it relates to the legalization of marijuana. It did not eliminate the illicit side of the marijuana industry. In fact, it made it a lot more profitable. They've done such a good job of taxing the product that now it's cheaper to buy the illicit product, and people are going to go where the bargain is. Why do you think Amazon has reached the pillars of success that they've reached? It's because people are always looking for a bargain. If you can buy the same dope at half the price of the legal dope, where do you think they're going to buy the dope?
Well, look, Colorado is swimming in taxpayer money right now.
No, they're not. It's not generating nearly what they projected that it would generate because of the illicit side, because people are now avoiding buying the legal marijuana. Do the research. It's there. People don't want to believe it, but it's there.
I know people in Colorado, I can tell you, why do you think people are flooding to that state? Because they have a great system.
People are flooding to that state. Why are people leaving California? Why did more than half the counties in California didn't even approve the legalization of marijuana? These are myths. These are urban myths. We need to look at the underlying empirical data. Got to get to a break. We'll be right back. On the Blue Runner Gumbo opinion poll, should Mexican cartels be considered terrorist organizations? 100% of the respondents say yes. Let's go to Smuckers out in New Roads. Welcome to the show, Smuckers.
Hey, Sheriff.
Yes, sir.
New Roads. Hey, I got a question. You were going after one of my favorite politicians. You went after AOC the other day.
She's my favorite, too.
It kind of strikes me a little bit as unaware, because I got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Last 40 years, who paid for your health care?
Who paid for my health care? I did.
With taxpayer money, right? You got money from taxpayers.
Well, I was a government employee, so I had an employer-sponsored health plan, yeah.
And paid for your house and your kids and all that kind of stuff. You kind of thrived on socialism.
Working for the government is socialism?
Well, policing is a form of socialism. Like, I pay taxes for police, but I don't use them. Right? I never call them. But I understand that paying for it.
And you don't reap the benefit at all from that. Ever.
That's socialism. That's, you know, everybody pays in.
There's no doubt that there's been the utility of certain things that have been embraced by government, and that's what they provide, and it's not a capitalistic approach to certain things, because how would you govern law enforcement in the private sector, water in the private sector, sewer in the private sector, and things of that nature in the development of this country? Yeah, I mean,
well,
there are government sponsored activities everywhere. It doesn't mean you're a socialist country.
But they have socialist aspects, and police, fire, public libraries.
Don't disagree with you there.
Those are socialism. But I think it's kind of unaware if you're like attacking socialism. But you need to be aware of how you funded your life, your house, your thing. I mean, it's because taxpayers gave money to you to do a job, and every taxpayer paid for it.
Well, they didn't give money to me. They paid me for a service that I provided to the government, my labor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, and that's and that, I mean.
No different than if they paid a private sector company or anybody else for purposes of procuring services for that organization.
But you didn't do that. You didn't go to a private. There's a lot of private sector jobs. You chose to work for the taxpayers and to provide a social good.
Correct.
And that's socialism. Like I think you're attacking
it is a very elementary form of it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, congratulations. You're one of the fine recipients of socialism, and you've had a good life. And I appreciate you finally getting into the private sector.
Well, I mean, you know. So, what are you saying that we should abolish all of the government-based services in this country? I don't know what point he's trying to prove. You know, there. The fact of the matter is yeah, some people choose government service, some don't. That doesn't mean that there's not value in it. That doesn't mean that government and the leaders of this country recognized at some point in time that you just couldn't have a competitive nature as it relates to some of the basic services for a society, that it had to be in a more ordered and structured way, and the capitalistic approach wasn't going to work in some of those industries. Now, that has changed over the years. In fact, they have privatized water, they've privatized sewer, they've privatized any number of things in any number of areas. And in fact, they've consolidated government services in some states where multiple counties, municipalities are joining together and consolidating law enforcement services and other things for the benefit of the taxpaying public. But no matter what, one bargains with their labor, and they choose whether or not they're going to go to work for government, or they're going to go to work in the private sector, or they'll go to work in a quasi-public arena, because there's that too. But that's a very elementary and rudimentary view of socialism. And I'm not sure what point he was trying to make, you know, that there are situations, as I pointed out, that it makes more sense to have it as government back. But back to the question about whether or not Mexican cartels should be considered terrorist organizations and what it would bring to the table. Some of the benefits would be a much broader intelligence and enforcement approach, matrix, regimen, however you want to talk about it. It would also give enforcement authorities the ability to freeze assets and managing hundreds, if not thousands, of new Mexican cartel additions to the terror watch list, no-fly list. You know, it would be a lot more of an intrusive and laser-type approach to that. It would add law enforcement attaché personnel in U.S. facilities abroad that we don't necessarily have in Mexico. So there's any number of benefits that would exist there. Would it distract or maybe detract from overall looking at domestic terrorist organization, DTOs, or others like ISIS and Al-Qaeda and Taliban and alike? Maybe. But I don't think that there's going to be a significant downside to this situation. We want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text 870-870. Do you think that the Mexican cartels ought to be characterized as terrorist organizations? We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. This hot off the press, Connecticut Supreme Court has ruled that the gun maker Remington can be sued over how it marketed the Bushmaster rifle used to kill 20 children and 6 educators at Sandy Hook Elementary School in 2012. Justices issued a 4-3 ruling that reinstated a wrongful death lawsuit and overturned a lower court ruling that the lawsuit was prohibited by a 2005 federal law that shields gun manufacturers from liability in most cases when their products are used in crimes. This line of thinking is not too much different than what AOC was attempting to do in the Financial Services Committee the other day with the Wells Fargo Bank executive, is holding people responsible for the individual acts, evil acts, intentional acts of others in using whatever the instrumentality that's been produced. My question simply is where is this going to end? Is this going to hold true for knives too? So are all knife manufacturers going to be held liable if a knife is used in a mass killing event? Or a bat? Or whatever the instrumentality may be? Many people I know right away are going to say, oh, don't be ridiculous. You know, you can't kill that man. You can't? Why not? Why couldn't you bound a bunch of people up and then end up knifing them all to death? It can happen. Those are realistic outcomes. I don't know where this ends. And as AOC tried to connect the other day, an oil pipeline and whether or not there's a spill that the financier of the company that gives them working capital or finance the project should be held accountable because there was a leak. Or they provided money for a security company that engages in private jails, and therefore if they engage in an illegal activity, the bank who financed them for a legal activity should be held responsible. I'm not sure how all of this is going to ultimately square up. Maybe AOC is not as nuts as I thought she was. I don't know. You tell me, 260-1870, or text me at 870-870. On the should Mexican cartels be considered terrorist organizations? 96% of the respondents say they should. Let's go to line one, talk to Jeffrey. What say you, Jeffrey?
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, sir.
Well, the news that just came before about that you just spoke of is very interesting. And it's a catch-22 situation. We want laws to protect ourselves, but we don't want things to infringe on our peace and our freedom.
Yeah, it's always a balance of interest, isn't it?
Yeah. You see, you know, we all want peace, but, you know, some people hold some things more dear than others, like this gun issue. You know, some people, there are a lot of people who don't have guns in their house. They don't hunt. They don't do all those things. It's not a big thing to them. But for some other people, it's their life. Is what they do. It's all they think about. The Second Amendment. They know the Second Amendment back and forth. And the other thing I want to talk about is the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
The Democratic Party is at a place where the Republican Party was maybe 50 years ago, where people had came upon the party, were coming in the party. There were minorities within the party, but they were making headways. And they were changing the party. What you're having now is a change going on. Most Democrats don't think the way that Ms. Cortez thinks, but there are a lot of people within the party that think so way. But they are minorities right now, but they're making headway. So you can't generalize all Democrats at this point. But there may be a point of time where you can.
Well, there seems to be more and more.
Years from now, most Democrats might be like her, but then it's not the way right now.
Well, the only point I was trying to make earlier is it seems that more and more are embracing a lot of these aspirational issues that I don't know how they're going to weave this into government operationally where it's going to make sense. In fact, pretty much every major Democratic candidate for president that's announced has embraced legalization of prostitution, legalization of marijuana, the Green New Deal.
See, that's their thing. These people who are minorities within the party, they don't see, they think it's freedom. The word freedom means something different to them. They don't see a place for jails. They think we all should have. I'm laughing, but it's really not funny.
No, it's not funny.
The way of thinking is there shouldn't be any jails.
No, absolutely, Jeffrey. I got to get to a break. I apologize. Went over in the last break. Thanks so much for calling. As always, we'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. On a text line, if Remington can be held responsible, I want to know the manufacturer of that hammer the coward in Terrytown used the other day. I mean, that's the example that, you know, and that was tragic, obviously. And, you know, but how far does this go? I mean, how about a piece of pipe? How about a length of 2x4? Is there any number of instrumentalities that can be used in order to take the life of another? And if we're going to start holding manufacturers responsible because of intentional violent acts of thugs, crazy people, or otherwise, people that are mentally disturbed, it's not a question of culpability on their part if the individual's mentally disturbed, but it now we're going to hold the manufacturer of the instrumentality culpable. This is, in my view, bootstrapping at best, and I don't know where this ends. And in fact, any number of manufacturers are, you know, they may not even locate here in this country anymore and make themselves subject to laws that are going to hold them responsible for these types of acts. We can minimize this as much as we want, but this is going to have a detrimental effects in many, many respects. Let's go to David out in Diamond Head. What say you, David?
Hey, how are you, sir?
Doing great.
I was listening to you just a few minutes ago, and you were saying something about Connecticut.
Yes, sir.
Is going to allow Remington Arms to be sued.
For the lawsuit to move forward, and they're not able to take advantage of I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought of the gun manufacturer's shield from liability.
Yeah, that has got to be the stupidest thing. That I mean, these liberals are just crazy. That's like shooting the postman delivering you a letter. It's like shooting him if you get a bill or something. It's ridiculous. You cannot sue the manufacturers, because that's going to open up. It's going to bankrupt them all. All the manufacturers, Remington's in trouble now financially. So something like this, you know, I'm an avid hunter, a deer hunter and stuff. So, you know, it could affect all of us down the road, down the road.
Absolutely, David. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Benson and Homer real quick. What say you, Benson?
How you doing, Mr. Norman? Thank you for your service to our fine state.
Thank you, sir.
The problem I have with the court ruling is the AR-15 was not used in the Sandy Hook shooting. It was in the trunk of the car.
It was in the trunk of the car. It was not used. I understand. But that's...
They used two 9mm pistols. So what does... If the AR-15 was not used, how can they blame the maker of the AR-15?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know.
That's part of the corruption and the insult that is this government today, you know?
It's going to be interesting to see, and I just, every time I think I've seen the craziest things ever, I just have to wake up the next morning, and there's something that beats the previous day. We'll be right back. Thanks so much.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.